Welcome once again to our program, number 18 actually, The Da Vinci Code Deciphered. We've been talking about this book that made such headlines across the United States and even across the world that was such a fundamental attack on the basic teachings of Christianity and especially of Catholicism. And we've come up to the point where we're talking about the Gnostic Gospels. We've been talking about the Gnostic writings, or these hidden writings that supposedly the church hadn't known about until recently, the discoveries. And the church was dealing with them in the second and third century in the writings of the fathers. So we're trying to find out the distinction between these Gnostics, or what we would call counterfeit Gospels or epistles or Acts, and the genuine four Gospels. Our guest once again is Ron Eldred, who is a teacher of history, government, and religion, American history, world history, church history, at John Paul II Catholic High. And I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, pastor emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church in 19th and Poplar here in terrific Terre Haute. Ron, welcome once again. It is the new year, so it's a new beginning. We're trying to ring out the old and ring in the new, ring out the false and ring in the true, as Tennyson says. You mentioned in our discussion that there have been several programs over the holiday weekends about the Gnostic writings. Maybe you could say a word or two about that, because it shows us how consistently this information is being put on the air.
Well, for the last 2 years at least, there's been numerous programs about the Gnostic Gospels from some vantage point or another. And
Mention a few of the more popular.
Well, I had predicted, and not our last discussion, I think the discussion before, that there would probably be a lot of them this coming holidays, and we were approaching, of course, the Christmas holidays at the time. And sure enough, there probably, without exaggerating, there were 8 to 10, maybe even more. I saw 5 or 6 of them on the Gnostic Gospels, or the Gnostic writings, but usually they call them the Gnostic Gospels.
I mean, covering the whole thing.
Yes. And the theme was almost always the same, and it's been almost the same for the last couple of years. It's the idea that supposedly these writings, these Gnostic writings, contain information about Jesus that'll tell us about the real Jesus. Something different than what, is told in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the canonical Gospels. That's almost exclusively the theme that you see in these programs.
Yeah, this is hidden knowledge that is coming to light now, and that the church has suppressed over the centuries in order to defend the supposed, what they would say, the divinity of Jesus, that Jesus is God made man.
They portray Jesus as a Gnostic Jesus. And in other words, the idea that he didn't come to save the world, he came by his suffering and death on the cross and his resurrection. It's sort of the idea he came into the world to save the world by giving a secret knowledge. And then that would help us find salvation. That's one of the common themes, of course, in Gnosticism.
And that, of course, would the Gnostic Gospels also, because it seems like so many people go with them, indicate that, and that's why we call them substitute or counterfeit, that Jesus is not really God made man?
Yes, the Gnostics would not hold to that view that Jesus is God. And so that's the reason we've been spending quite a bit of time on Gnosticism, not simply because it's so important to the Da Vinci Code, which it is. In fact, Dan Brown relies very heavily on various writers such as Elaine Pagels and numerous others, Margaret Starbird and others come to mind.
And you said Elaine Pagels was recently on one of these
programs. In fact, she was on two of the programs.
Okay. She's one of the great advocates of the Gnostic Gospels.
Yeah, she wrote a book called The Gnostic Gospels.
Okay.
I think it came out in about 1979, 1980 or something like that. But as we pointed out last, one of our last sessions or the session before, she, is considered one of the top scholars in the field. And in fact, she won the National Book Award for, which is one of the very top awards, of course, for any kind of a scholarly work for the Gnostic Gospels.
And yet in our discussion, you quoted many, many scholars.
Well, particularly Father Minkowski, who just basically had a devastating criticism of how he thought she misused the facts and misquoted people like St. Irenaeus to prove her point and things of that sort. But so that's, as I said, that's why we've been spending so much time on Gnosticism. For one reason, you can't understand the Da Vinci Code without having some understanding of Gnosticism and where Dan Brown would be coming from in that regard. And the other thing is because it has been, it's just basically swamping the airways with programs, trying to basically give us a different, completely different view of Jesus, other than the one that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, of course, gives us, the true story.
All right. Well,
and we have looked at two types of Gnosticism. Briefly, we looked at Persian Gnosticism, but that hasn't been too important. So for the most part, it's the Syrian-Egyptian brand that, for the most part, is the main strain of Gnosticism that we see so much on these programs that we watch, and in the Da Vinci Code.
And it, the Gnostic Gospels go back to, what, the 2nd and 3rd century?
Yes, that's true. As we had discussed in one of our earlier sessions, the proof is rather, is definitive that they weren't written at the very earliest until probably the mid-2nd century, in other words, 150 on. In fact, I'm reading a book right now called Fabricating Jesus by a man by the name of Craig Evans. And he has several chapters where he deals with that, proving that these Gospels, these Gnostic Gospels and Gnostic writings couldn't have been written before the mid-2nd century. And that's most scholars hold to that particular view. And of course, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the Synoptic Gospels, were written probably all of them before the year 70 in the first century. Within, let's say, 25 or 30 years of Christ's death and ascension
and John,
resurrection and ascension.
And John before 100?
Yes, certainly John was written sometime during the 90s. And so they were written long before any of the Gnostic Gospels were written.
Okay. All right, let me kind of focus on a very important question. What is the difference between the Gnostic or these hidden wisdom counterfeit Gospels and the four Gospels? I mean, obviously, there's a pretty big difference.
Yes. In addition to the clearly Gnostic elements found in the Gnostic writings, and we discussed some of those a little bit, looking at Jesus as, more like a ghost or a very ephemeral Jesus, rather than a really, truly human Jesus. They also possess a totally different character than do the canonical books. In comparison with the inspired books, Olson and Meisel, whom we've quoted many times in this series from their book, The Da Vinci Hoax, they tell us that the Gnostic writings are non-historical or even anti-historical in style and content, and that they contain little narrative or sense of chronology. For example, the Gospel of Thomas comes to mind. The Gospel of Thomas has no narrative at all. They're just simply about, 114 alleged sayings of Jesus. It is readily apparent that many of the sayings have a Gnostic meaning rather than a Christian one. And in contrast, the Bible contains a lot of spiritually analogical and moral meaning, but it also contains a clearly narrative historical background as well.
Okay, now you mentioned on several occasions around the Gospel of Thomas. Is that the one that's more often very popularly quoted?
It's probably quoted more than any. Okay. In fact, the Jesus seminar that we've mentioned several times, although we haven't gone into it too much, but they came out with a book called The Five Gospels. And the name of the five Gospels are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Thomas.
Oh.
And they believe that Funk and the other guys that are involved, John Dominic Crossan and some of the others, I think there's a man by the name of Meyer, and several other scholars that are involved with this Jesus seminar. They believe the Gospel of Thomas, at least an earlier version of it, they're just guessing now, goes back to about the mid-first century. Some of them even believe that it even goes back before Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Matthew, Mark, and Luke. There's absolutely no proof to that. Okay. In fact, there's all kinds of contrary evidence that that's true. Numerous scripture scholars have pretty well discredited that idea that Thomas can be. But their idea is that Thomas and a source that no one has ever really seen, it's just assumed that there was one, called Quell or Q, was used by Matthew and I believe Luke to write their Gospels, in addition to using the Gospel of Mark, if I recall right.
Okay, so we're really back to focus. If Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that the church has authenticated for 2,000 years, doesn't give us the true picture of Jesus, then we're lost in a morass and a quicksand of some people say this, some people say that, because these Gnostic Gospels are so contradictory to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
They certainly are.
Without the church's guidance, then we're adrift on this scholar says that, and this scholar guesses this, and we're into a sea of complete incertitude.
That's why we need the magisterium, or the teaching authority of the church. And as Luke Timothy Johnson points out, he was a brother at one time. I'm not sure but he's certainly one of the top scholars in scripture scholarship.
He's a Catholic.
Yes, he's a Catholic. Mm-hmm. What he teaches at Emory University, if I recall right, in the religion department there. But he points out in one of his chapters, in one of his books, how what's happened to the whole field of scripture scholarship, that probably 95%, maybe 98% of the scripture scholars now teach in secular universities, it's become just like any other profession. Any other field of inquiry. It's not something that's tied to the church anymore for the most part. Faith is not something that's a prerequisite, to being a scripture scholar and being faithful to the gospel and having faith that these things are true and what have you. A lot of times they just look at studying the Bible like any other historical source, literary source, and attack it from that point of view. And to get anywhere in these professions, you've got to always be coming up with new ideas.
Okay.
On dissertations, as you write your dissertations, as you write your books, and as you write your articles that you get your fame from, or you get your reputation from, and your promotions depend upon that, and they get caught up in that parish or publish kind of thing that you find in the colleges and universities. And so that's one of the things that explains all of this wild speculation that we're seeing, about the Gnostic Gospels. And other subjects as well.
Ori, would you say, obviously, from the Gnostic or this contradictory statements of the content to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is there any truth in the Gnostic writings?
Well, I could say at the beginning, I think that when they rely on Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John for content, they're just simply repeating what's, already in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So in that sense, you could say, there's some truth.
Mm-hmm.
They usually put a new twist to it, though, because they're trying to make some kind of a point or whatever. But Olson and Meisel and others assert that the Nag Hammadi documents that were found in Egypt in 1945, these were 13 codices that contained, or books, on papyrus, that contained over 50 Gnostic writings, and some of these were Gnostic Gospels. They assert that the Nag Hammadi documents have given us little, if any, new information about Jesus' life and teaching, or of events that occurred in the early church. This is explained in part, at least, because the documents were written generations after the events, as we pointed out. And in fact, probably as middle of the second century would be the earliest you would begin to see these Gnostic writings.
150 A.D.
Yes, 150 okay. A.D. And some of them, many of them, weren't written until the third century, on into the 200s. Moreover, Gnostic anti-historical bias, which we talked about in one of our earlier sessions, militated against Gnostic writings containing any historical content, because Gnostics had contempt for the material historical world, which we pointed out earlier, and we're going to point out more in, I think, the next session, and didn't believe that the true God would care anything about any kind of material, any material universe or world.
Okay. Sort of God is separate from the world he created, kind of cast it into space and let it go on its own.
Well, as we'll point out later on, Gnosticism was dualistic, which means, of course, that they believed that there were actually two gods. One God was a good God, and he created the spiritual world, which they considered to be good, and the other God, of course, was an evil God. And at least in some Gnostic versions, and he created the material world. We're going to spend some time on that and explain that whole thing here in one of our sessions.
Okay, I want to ask you a question here. Name, you mentioned Thomas, seems to, counterfeit Gospel of Thomas, or the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, seems to be the most quoted of any. Could you name two or three other top Gnostic Gospels that are quoted by scholars trying to say Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John aren't really the right story about Jesus?
Well, if you might recall, we did we listed 25 or 30 on one of our sessions, but thinking back, the ones that come to mind that are most quoted, certainly, as you said, the Gospel of Thomas, and then there's the Gospel of Philip. You see that one quoted quite a bit. You see the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. That one's referred to, if I recall right, in the Da Vinci Code. Also, the Edgerton Papyrus is another.
How about Judas?
The Gospel of Judas, which has just been discovered and come to the fore here in the last year or so. Well, they knew about it. The early church fathers knew about all these gospels. In fact, all we knew about these gospels, for the most part, came from these church fathers in the second, third, fourth century, people like St. Irenaeus, people like Tertullian, people like Origen, St. Augustine, and St. Justin Martyr, St. Ignatius of Antioch, people like that. Particularly St. Irenaeus and Tertullian.
And they were quoting long sections.
Yes, they quoted long segments of these
Gnostic
Gospels to refute them.
To say why they were wrong.
Why they were wrong. And so for the most part, what we knew of these came from these church fathers. But when the Gospels were found at Nag Hammadi, or when the Gnostic writings were found at Nag Hammadi, several of those that we already knew about, but didn't have any actual manuscripts of it. Now, they were, you know, now and then there would be a papyrus sheet that would show up somewhere, or a codice, which was in a book form rather than a scroll or roll form, would show up in a monastery somewhere, you know, had been hidden back or lost into a monastery library centuries and centuries and centuries ago that had come down to us. But for the most part, the actual number of Gnostic writings that were written, you know, back in the 3rd, 4th century or so were very sparse until this Nag Hammadi discovery in 1945.
Of copies of these substitute, or what I like to call them, is the counterfeit Gospels. Well, Ron, before we go on to another topic, Because obviously, as you mentioned, there's so much been about it on television and radio over the holidays. It seems to be a very popular topic because it's kind of presented as something revolutionary, new information we never had before.
Well, one thing I would like to say, we did mention earlier, there are other apocryphal writings that are not necessarily Gnostic. That do contain a lot of stories about, you know, the baby Jesus and the stories about Mary when she was a little girl and all kinds of things like that that fill in a lot of the details. But for the most part, these are fanciful. You know, there are stories.
Harmless.
Harmless, but and although there may be some, you know, a grain of truth in some of these stories. A lot of the cathedrals in Europe, the old cathedrals that were built and the churches were built back in the Middle Ages, have stained glass windows and paintings of a lot of these apocryphal stories. And, you know, there's stories that Jesus, when he was a young boy, striking another boy dead, you know, because he got angry with him and all kinds of things.
Or making clay birds.
Touching clay birds, yes.
And they would fly away. And remember there was one about Mary and Joseph and Jesus on the way to Egypt, and that robbers were after them, and they went into the cave, and a spider spun a big web, and so the robers knew they couldn't be in the cave. Just beautiful, fanciful.
Yes, those are not Gnostic, you know, yeah. Necessarily. Those are just, like you said, they're fanciful stories. People made up to fill in the details about Jesus and about his family, the Holy Family, and what have you, and harmless. And as I said, a lot of these have found their way into stained glass windows and into paintings and what have you back in the Middle Ages.
Sure. Well, I'm glad to know that. I didn't know that they got into the cathedral window.
but the Gnostic writings are different.
Sure.
They have a totally different focus. They're talking about a different kind of Jesus, a Jesus who wasn't God, as you'll see later on. As we'll see later on in our discussions when we actually get into explaining Gnosticism per se, why that's true.
And of course, that's one of the bullseye themes of the Da Vinci Code, that Jesus is really not God. He's a prophet. A wonderful, charismatic person, a great teacher, but he certainly wasn't God. He was a rabbi that drew great crowds and the like.
Or a cynic, or other, all kinds of things that, for example, John Dominic Crossan wrote a book called The Cynic Jesus.
The cynic?
Yeah, the cynics were philosophers that existed.
Roman?
Existed back in ancient Greece and through that period, and they were really an uncouth bunch for the most part.
Ron, are there any other Gnostic groups that you would like to mention before we go to another different topic?
Well, there have been other Gnostic schools and movements over the centuries, including a strong neo-Gnostic movement during our own time, that is new Gnostic. A lot of the New Age movement is Gnostic in a lot of ways.
And it's this hidden wisdom that only the elite can understand.
Yes. For example, both Simon Magus, or Simon the Magician, and Marcion of Sinope had Gnostic tendencies, and we'll come back and talk about Marcion in our next session. But their forms of Gnosticism were somewhat undeveloped, and there were numerous other Gnostic groups existing from the late 1st century to the 13th century, including ones called the Cerinthians, and there were the Ophites, and so named because they worshipped the serpent of Genesis as the bestower of knowledge. And then there were the Cainites, who worshipped Cain, and as well as Esau and Korah and the Sodomites, and the Cathars and Albigensians of the 13th century. You might recall that St. Dominic is known for converting many of them back to Orthodox Christianity. This was in, if I recall right, southern France, where these Albigensians were so prominent. That's a form of Gnosticism. And before we go on to another topic, I want to emphasize that not all Gnostics were Christians, though. The Valentinians were, the Basilidians were, they were some of the main ones. The Marcionites were. There were Jewish brands of Gnosticism as well as pagan ones. And so only some of the writings from the 2nd through the 5th centuries were clearly a synthesis of Gnostic and Christian ideas. And this is particularly true of the ones named after Valentinius, the Valentinian form of Gnosticism.
All right, now I think it would be helpful to our listeners because many have only heard perhaps a section here and there of our series. Let's summarize, because we're trying to say that the Da Vinci Code has so many false conclusions in it that it puts organized Catholic Church into meltdown if we would believe these very strange conclusions.
Well, the first one we refuted was that Jesus Christ, these were claims you find in the Da Vinci Code now.
Right.
As identified by Olson and Meisel. That Jesus Christ was not truly God, but merely a good man, raised to a deity by the Emperor Constantine in 325 A.D. at the Council of Nicaea. We, of course, I think, pretty substantially refuted that. And then the second, that Jesus Christ came not to save the world from sin, but to restore the sacred feminine, which we have been discussing,
okay,
because this is when the whole subject of Gnosticism comes up. And then we're going to go and discuss another criticism. Jesus Christ was married to Mary Magdalene and had children, and we're going to refute that, that he appointed Mary Magdalene to head the Catholic Church instead of Peter. We're going to refute that. And that finally, the Catholic Church has kept these and other so-called facts hidden through force and intimidation over the centuries, and we're going to refute that. And what we're going to do in our next session is take a look at Gnosticism itself, because you can't understand the Da Vinci Code, and you certainly can't understand all these programs that have been going on here for the last year or two about the Gnostic Gospels without this. In fact, not long ago, my wife and I were watching one, and I told them, I said, you know, people who are watching this, it's too bad they haven't heard Father and I's discussion on this whole subject, because I said, at least on what is Gnosticism, because they can't understand what they're talking about up there if they don't have that kind of knowledge.
And, of course, the roots of the Da Vinci Code are in the Gnostic Gospels. And that's why they come to these very strange and counterfeit conclusions that really wipe out Jesus as we learn of him from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Okay, well, I think our time is running close to the end, and we will hopefully be back again with you for our 19th session next week. So may God bless you always and in all ways. Yeah.